Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service. Catch all the hard-hitting news and current affairs that focuses on all relevant First Nations issues from a First Nations standpoint. This is Bo Spearham with Let's Talk.
Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk. Before I go on any further, I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners on this land we are broadcasting from. I also would like to pay my respects to our elders and also our elders of more recent arrival, and a big shout out to everybody around the continent that is taking our program via the National Indigenous Radio Service NIRS, or if you're tuning in via our app, 98.9 FM, for the best country, which you can download for free from your app store. So please do so, and you can tune in when you please on demand. Or if you're tuning in via our website, 989fm.com.au, our website, through our website, this program is podcasted, so you can listen to previous Let's Talks. This one will be up a little bit later on in the day. Also, other programs and interviews are podcasted via our website as well. Just go to programs and whatever show you like to listen to, Let's Talk, The Drive, Brekkie, whatever, DC Radio, Murray Hour, all those interviews are up there on our website. You can also catch us on Spotify and Apple Podcast, and those platforms beaming us into your communities. And as always, it is great to have your company.
What we've done to date to try and stop it. So, Bo, we started with a petition 3 years ago, and that was about trying to stop the transfer of the lease from Redden City Council over to the Native Title body. And that petition to date has over 30,000 something signatures. Alongside that, we've protested. We've done other petitions. We've also responded to or objected to the ministerial infrastructure designation process, which is a process that basically allows development with the approval of the minister and prevents the things like appeals and that kind of stuff from community. Our understanding is that they are on the island, so they've arrived on the island, and we've had word back that they didn't realise how controversial the project was. And I guess understandably, maybe because, you know, they replied to a tender, the project went out to tender, they replied, they got it, and you know, they arrive, and there's an embassy set up in the site where they're due to come in and start building.
And that was Pakia Ruska. I chatted with her last week on the program about Point Lookouts on Stradbroke Island, where you know, there's a battle actually happening right now for the construction of a whale. So there was bones that were found, and they're looking to do, I believe it's like a tourist attraction kind of thing, where they'll have the bones on display and make a lookout towards the ocean as well. And at the moment, currently, there are some mob on the island who have set up an embassy. And as I said, that was Kira Ruska this morning on a program. I'm just going to have a chat to Uncle Dale Ruska, her old man, and just get an update on how things are going on the island as well. Good morning, Unc. Before I go any further, could I get you to tell us your name, your mob, and where you're from, please?
Good morning, Brian. Thanks for allowing us the opportunity to express our issues on the radio station. I'm Gurumpal Guru from Stradbroke Island. I belong to the Morton Ruska families from this place. Got bloodlines into the Yuggera and on to many of the mobs throughout south-southeast Queensland just from kinship. Yeah, so thank you.
No, all good, Unc. You know, I just played like a snippet that we got from last week on the program, and Pakiri mentioned a whole bunch of things that you've been doing over the last 3 years, you know, petitioning, you know, I guess writing and calling ministers, and then I guess the last sort of straw was to set up an embassy, the Quandamooka Truth Embassy at Point Lookout. It's been up for quite some time now. How's things going?
Yeah, the embassy's going good. We had a really windy night here on the island. It was blowing 40 to 50 knots, so that was a bit of a struggle for those that were out here camping and managing the campsite. There's been a lot of support from non-Indigenous people, especially in relation to our efforts to try and prevent the destruction of this unique piece of headland, which is very important spiritual and cultural significance to ourselves, and it has very important environmental and scenic values to the non-Aboriginal people. So, yeah, it's going reasonably well. We're in the second week now of the embassy's we're at the beginning of the third week of the embassy's establishment here, and hopefully there's some realisation from state government and from our local Aboriginal prescribed body corporate that this is something that's not wanted by a significant portion of the island community, as well as many thousands of others that visit this destination.
And just for our listeners as well, could we get you to sort of tell us the significance of the spot, but then also what the issue is with the whale bones as well?
Yeah, well, this area where we're located here, it's a little piece of the headland, and the whole of the headland located at Point Lookout is of cultural importance and spiritual significance. It contains several areas within it that have very high cultural values, and for us, it's a really significant piece of a cultural landscape that should never ever be developed, even though a lot of the area adjacent around Point Lookout has already been developed as a result of colonial processes and colonial townships establishments. It's only been recently that, when I say recently, in the last decade or two, that we're supposed to be able to have a say on what happens with our future and the future of our place through legislation such as native title. But that process has been a process that's been exclusive for many of us, and we've been locked out of it and denied the opportunity of input. So we're trying to address a lot of the concerns that we have raised now for not just the last 3 years, but over the last 10 in relation to native title through our prescribed body corporate. But where we're protesting out here isn't as a result of native title alone. It's in response to a process called the economic transition of the North Stradbroke Island economy as a result of the end of sand mining on the island here, which occurred officially last year. The last of the mineral extraction occurred. Now they're in the winding down process. And it was a process that was supposed to address the social economic needs of the mining company employees that were made redundant to ensure that an economy on the island here was retained and sustained and further developed. But unfortunately, the concepts of the aspirations of the alternative economy were developed by mostly the state government and in conjunction with our local native title prescribed body corporate. So it's there's a lot of questions over why the state government used the native title prescribed body corporate, who's responsible for native title management, to facilitate and assist in the development and the implementation of the alternate economic strategies for the island here, which has a single focus on tourism. Where we're protesting here is against one of the, I think it's 23 concepts developed in consultations between government and PBC with the focus on tourism, and it's to establish a whale facility, a whale interpretive facility here at the location, which will also allow the University of Queensland to be able to facilitate research from. And going back, you heard a little bit from Pickeri a decade ago, and it coincided the consent determination of 2011. A whale washed ashore here on Main Beach on Stradbroke Island, and that whale had suffered traumatically from an infestation of scorpion crab parasites, and it was still alive when it washed ashore, but it was died a very traumatic death. And it was then buried in the sand dunes and later, a couple of years later, dug up out of the sand dunes and sent over to the mainland from there to Canada to be treated and preserved. And there's a lot of emphasis and quite a lot of taxpayers' funding being used to develop up the proposal for here, which involves the design and now in the implementation, or supposed to be in the implementation or the construction of the facilities, which some of us are saying is an over-extravagant, very costly architecturally designed coffin to house these remains. And we've also considered the cultural importance of the whales through our Yuri or totemic kinship systems. And the whale is something that wasn't a Yuri for us Stradbroke Island people. The saltwater Yuri for the Stradbroke Island people was the dolphin shared with the Moreton Island people, and our land Yuri was the carpet snake. And we've been in contact with other Aboriginal people, First Nations people from around the country who are the actual Yuri owners, and they're feeling offended as well that there's a proposal in place to develop a structure to house the remains of something that's really spiritually significant to them. So in a nutshell, that's the story. And in the beginning, we were saying that those remains, once they were dug up, should have been automatically returned to the ocean where the whale belongs. But since then, there's been a lot of contamination of those remains. We assume through the cleansing and the sterilising and the preserving process that's been undertaken, and now it might be detrimental to return those remains to their local environment, being the ocean. So we're having consultation with the other mobs from around the country who are the owners of that Yuri to see what their aspirations are now for repatriation. And, yeah, we're waiting to find out how the state government and how the native title prescribed body corporate is going to respond.
So this is sort of in response to one of the sort of 20 planned projects. And is that throughout Stradbroke Island as well, the other 20 or the other 19?
Yeah, excuse me. Yeah, that's right. There's 23 concepts. Or I think it's 23 anyway. I think it's about 11 or 12 of those concepts have been given to the Native Title Prescribed Body Corporate to take responsibility for the development and implementation of. The Native Title Prescribed Body Corporate says that they have facilitated all consultation and engagement processes with the local Aboriginal community. We question that, and we've questioned it now for some years due to us not being directly engaged and due to the fact that we've raised other economic priorities that we felt were necessary to be addressed, only to be disregarded and ignored by state government and also by our local PPC. So when it come time for this project to go through all the approvals processes of government, it was approved through what's called a MID, a Ministerial Infrastructure Designation, where the minister of the state government relevant to this land tenure approves the whole project. And through the minister's approval, he eliminates all public opportunity to lodge any opposition or any objection to the proposal and to go through any legal judicial review processes. So, it's really caused a big disadvantage, not just to the Aboriginal community, but to the entire community of Stradbroke Island.
Mm. And if you're just tuning in to Let's Talk, my guest is Uncle Dale Rusko. We're chatting about the Quandamooka Truth Embassy, why it was set up. I guess now as well, what's sort of the long-term goal for the embassy? You know, is it sort of to stay there as long as possible? Is it to, use this space as sort of an alternative to sort of, what they want to do at the moment with the construction, with what they want to do with that site in particular?
Well, the embassy was set up because we'd exhausted all political and legal and parliamentary processes to have our views and opinions heard. Because the government or the PBC weren't listening at all, and the planned date of construction commencement was the 3rd of February, we were left with no choice if we were going to try to protect and maintain the spiritual, cultural values that are important to us, but to have to come in and set up an embassy on site here. The embassy's focus is truth and the exposure of truth, and there's a lot of talk now about how we're going to try and address this one issue in particular, but there's a lot of talk around the need of truth exposure to deal with many of the historical injustices that have been committed against Aboriginal people as a result of colonial common law imposition and controls. And we're calling for, from the embassy here, Royal Commission into the Native Title Act and into the roles and responsibilities of the Native Title prescribed by the corporates. So it's long-term goal, or the short-term goal is to hopefully prevent, that's our aim, and we plan to be here for as long as we need to, the construction of the proposal on the site and the desecration of its sacred significance. In the long term, we hope to get a full address to the way that the Native Title Act operates and the PBC operate, and the whole extent of discrimination and an injustice that's contained within the Native Title Act itself.
It's definitely, contentious or sort of debatable, the role that sort of Native Title has played for lots of our mob, and I could even, talk from, personal experience from our mob from down home, that's the same thing. And possibly for lots of mob around the country is that, this sort of, there's always a split, but you could always, literally put a split, in between in the middle of the room for people who are, necessarily for Native Title or not necessarily for Native Title as well. And it's quite sad.
Yeah, that's right. It's caused division right around the country between mob and, mob were united fully for the first couple of centuries of our struggle's progression, the Aboriginal rights struggle, and where we're at now. And this needs to be considered historically, and how we've been controlled by foreign policies and foreign value systems resulting from colonial common law imposition. And we've seen, and we're very fortunate now that we never seen, our ancestors paid the very extremely high price throughout the frontier times era. And then after that, we were forced into being controlled under Aboriginal protection legislations, and then later forced to be subjected to the Aboriginal Assimilation Act and policies, which involved the stolen generations and everything else. And we've seen some small advantages come from the 67 referendum, and we've seen the big advantages start to grow from the 72 Aboriginal 10 embassy establishment. And from that, then we've seen government use their authority and their privilege, and also their assumed racial superiorities, to develop legislations which would minimise and control our rights progression in the forms of land rights and more recently, native title. And those legislations are about ensuring that through the engagement of Aboriginal people, the legitimacy of colonial common law and its authority are retained. And we just need to go back a couple of years ago to when there was big issues around the commencement of the Adani Carmichael proposal, and what that involved, and an Aboriginal junior council that worked on Stradbroke Island throughout for 10 years prior to Native Title's consent determination, and who was very influential in reaching consent determination on Stradbroke Island, 10 years later become Australia's first Aboriginal senior council, or SILC. When his own people and his own cultural values were faced with the risks and the potential future impacts of a Native Title Indigenous Land Use Agreement for the Adani Carmichael, he concluded, as Australia's first SILC, that the Native Title Act was embedded with racism and it forced Aboriginal people to be coerced into accepting discriminatory Indigenous Land Use Agreements. So that's been a big concern for some of us here, not just us here, like many of the mob on the mainland as well now for some time, going back well before the implementation of the Native Title Act. And you just need to look back at the protests we had at Parliament House when the gates were pulled down. But now, as a race of original people and a nation of many nations, we've become consciously divided as a result of the common law usurping and the common law coercion of ourselves into these discriminatory processes. And that division now is a struggle that we're faced with over a fence of a conscious moral being. And we need to resolve for ourselves as original First Nations people whether the solutions of justice and fairness and racial equality lie within the systems of colonial common law, or whether those solutions rely upon our own efforts as the first people of this country and our own efforts' ability to be self-determining.
Just sort of in wrapping up before I head off, Unc, as well, you mentioned earlier there's lots of support that you have, you know, from mob on the island and also from the local non-Indigenous community on the island as well. And I'm sure it's the same off the island as well here on the mainland. For lots of people that are tuning in and listening, what's sort of the best way for them to support the Quandamooka Truth Embassy?
Yeah, well, I just need to clarify fully first that there's not a lot of support from our local mob. It's a handful of young local people that have displayed the courage and stepped up to facilitate this action with the support of a number of the elders from the island. So it's a bit sad, but there's not a lot of support from our local First Nations mob. The majority of the support is coming from the non-Indigenous people, and to us that's really important because it's non-Indigenous people that control the democracy of this country. Like, we're only 3% of that total democracy. We're a small minority and they're the other 97%. So if there's going to be change in relation to justice and equality and common laws progression, it's got to come from the 97%, which are the controlling majority of the democratic system that this country now functions from.
Definitely, you know, and I guess that's sort of, you know, the big push from yourself to people, you know, is the sort of, you know, people power sort of pushes the card along as well. I just want to say thanks, you know, for coming and joining us on the program this morning as well. It's always a pleasure to have you on, and would definitely love to sort of keep up, you know, getting yourself, Bakiri, or, you know, some of the other mob on the show as well to sort of update us on how things are going. You know, would love to sort of keep our listeners up to date on what's happening over that way as well.
Yeah, and we're very grateful to yourself and to your program there for allowing us the opportunity to be able to share, and we look forward to sharing a lot further in the future. So yeah, big gratitude back to yourself, Bo, and to 98.9.
All good, Unc, all good. You know, coming up, we're going to head to Uncle Archie Roach and Ruby Hunter, Keep Your Hand Out. We're going to go to that song, but before that, we're going to head to a break. You are listening to Let's Talk on Murray Country, 98.9 FM.
February 4th is World Cancer Day. It's about raising awareness and education about cancer. This year's theme, I Am and I Will, aims to empower us to take action now, which can have a positive impact on our health. Some ways mob can reduce the burden of cancer are quit smoking, maintain a healthy weight by exercising regularly, and eating healthy foods. Of course, early detection is important too. Regular visits to the doctor for health checks can help you stay on top of your health and lessen the chance of you being at risk. Women over 30 years old should have a pap smear done every 5 years. Remember, prevention is better than cure. So in recognition of World Cancer Day, let's focus on making healthy choices. For more information about World Cancer Day, check out their website, worldcancerday.org.
A message from the Institute of Urban Indigenous Health.
Station sponsor. Yes, you criticize.
it's too late.
If you are just tuning in to Let's Talk, my first guest, Uncle Dale Ruska, joining us this morning to have a chat and give us an update on how things are going with the Quandamooka Truth Embassy at Point Lookout on Stradbroke Island, or so-called Stradbroke Island. Thanks for that, Uncle. And like I said, we'd definitely love to have you back on the program sometime soon. Also, what I forgot to mention at the beginning of the program, yesterday was the anniversary of the apology, the national apology given by Kevin Rudd 13 years ago to members of the Stolen Generation. For you who don't know who, you know, what the Stolen Generation is, quite sad if you don't, but after 1901, the Federation of this country, and when missions were established, and policies later were established, there was Aboriginal children who originally were half castes, so supposedly, who were given that the term half caste, were forcibly removed from their families and put into dormitories. And they were just forcibly, you know, forcibly removed and educated, told not to speak their language or, you know, perform their culture or anything or any, you know, not to do anything that would entail them to be culturally proud of who they are. That was completely stripped. And then eventually the boys and the girls were separated. They always were separated. The women were taught to be domestic slaves, and the men were taught to sort of be drovers and handymen and sort of work on cattle stations as well. I do urge you to have a look at our documentary that we made here at 98.9 FM last year. I do believe it's called, I think it's called something Daylight. It's about Aunty Dawn Daylight. If you're local here in Brisbane and here and sort of in a city, you'll know Aunty Dawn, very beautiful soul. If you're at an event, you'll always see her with a guitar singing a song. She has an amazing story of how she went to one of, or how she was a domestic slave for one of the most prestigious girls' schools here in Brisbane. It's an amazing documentary. It's short, but it's really good and it's worth watching as well. That was put together by Dewey and Callan, and they followed Anne around for a couple of months collecting and making this story for what it is as well, and an important story. You know, and it's a very significant date, one, because, you know, I believe, you know, and I personally believe that the apology was needed, you know, for our old people, but I also believe that there was, you know, there is more that needs to be done to rectify what happened, you know, to our elders. I was looking up some stuff, you know, and I just sort of want to go over something in regard to that, and maybe my next guest that I have on can sort of, you know, give us an update on how things went as well. But I just find this very, very interesting. Not interesting, but, you know, just like a real wild moment. So the exact numbers of children removed is unknown. The estimate of numbers have been widely disputed. The Brigham Home report says that at least 100,000 children were removed from their parents. This figure was estimated by multiplying the Aboriginal population in 1994, which was 300,000, by reports maximum, by the report's maximum estimate, that's one in three Aboriginal persons separated from their families. And, you know, this was all around the country as well when they brought in you know, the Protection Acts and the rights and their rights to remove Aboriginal children from their families as well. Each sort of state and territory, you know, governed their own sort of Aboriginal Aboriginal policies and acts, but, you know, most of them were sort of mirrored off each other in terms of removing their children. And in some cases, and in most cases, these children were removed hundreds of miles away from their families out of small missions, dormitories, sorry, run by missionaries and run by, you know, nuns and, you know, all these people as well. Also, there was big news that we mentioned that was mentioned last week. That was all over the media, was, you know, the sacking of, you know, the Collingwood CEO, Eddie Maguire as well, which would love to sort of yarn a bit more about that, because not necessarily him, but, you know, he is a product of the society, and I think it's important to sort of highlight, you know, wins like that, but then also talk about the bigger picture and how structural racism works as well. But my second guest on the program is Brother Jack Lattimore, proud Guri man, Biripi man, but joining us all the way from Victoria. Good morning, brother. Thanks for coming on.
Good morning, brother. Thanks for having me.
I think I just answered my first question, which was tell us your mob and your country, but yeah, I just pretty much answered that.
Oh, yeah. Guri fella, Biripi, yeah. And Bungudi.
Yeah.
And probably further up too.
Mm. Now, thanks, that brother. And also tell us your role, and where you're working out, because I believe have you got another title since we've last spoke?
I did. I got another title. I got some sort of promotion, apparently. Yeah. So it is. I'm still with NITV, but yeah, just heading up the digital, acting manager for digital, NITV. So that's still shaping up into what that role is going to be.
Awesome. You know, congratulations, brother, for the promotion. And, you know,
well,
I guess
we don't know that yet, bro.
Don't know yet. Okay, radio. Jumping the gun here. No.
Well, I don't know. It could be a terrible thing. We don't know yet. But no, it's I've been back at work after some annual leaves for about a fortnight. And yeah, it's just been so hectic, you know, like getting my head around the new role and stuff. But also, you know, so much has happened, Collingwood. Anniversary, international apology.
An anniversary, like, Captain Cook as well.
Yeah,
there's a whole bunch of things going on in the media. But I guess
and
first,
still a fallout from Jan 26 as well.
Yeah, oh, hell yeah. Yes,
that,
yes.
That goes for a week or so after.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
End of January.
What, so you take a week off after, a couple weeks off after 26?
No, I did this year. I missed out. I had some sorry business up home there, and with an uncle, and so, yeah, I just missed it. I've been talking at work and saying it's a welcome relief to have missed it. Like, I haven't, I've always sort of done it. I took 1 year where I purposely went to Tasmania to get away from everything and sort of wrote about stuff from down there, that perspective a bit. But, I haven't really not done Jan 26 for, since forever. And this year, I was forced out of the coverage, and it was a welcome relief because...
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Even, I caught a little bit on January 26 in the morning. Like, I was in Port Macquarie, and I went down to Towns Beach there, had my flag shirt on, and copped some real, odd looks. Even that, and just the sunrise coverage that NITV did, I sort of seen a bit of that. And even when you try and sit on the sidelines, it still gets you.
Yeah, I definitely ain't now. Like, as much as we can try to escape that day, I think, like you said, you had the shirt on, and you can't not sort of get the looks for any other time of the year, but especially on that day, you're going to get the looks as well. There is a bit in the media, and we do have you for a bit of time, because you are a busy man, brother. I guess first we'll just sort of start off with. The sacking or the resignation of the Collingwood sort of CEO Eddie Maguire. Your thoughts on that, and obviously a long time coming.
I'm a Collingwood. I follow Collingwood. I wouldn't say I'm a supporter of Collingwood, but I've been I took on Collingwood as a decision to follow him. It's been a long time coming. They are a notoriously racist club. The reason I took them on is despite, that documented history of racism and discrimination and prejudice, a lot of the real old school staunch black activists and community advocates and stuff down here were supporters of the club, and I just like that paradox, so I kind of...
It's all good. I go for New South Wales. They've only started picking black fellas last couple of years. We won a couple of times, lost last year. But I guess last year doesn't really count because it was COVID. I get sort of the paradox as well. Queensland, for a period of time, won. Yeah. And also, had a half a side full of, amazing black fellas, minus one black fella though. But other than that,
thing, like the paradox of blackfellas and myself included supporting Queensland when for so long under the Act it was like racist types of persecution. But there were still blackfellas picked for the Maroons. So, that's a strange paradox in itself.
Yeah, it is. But one thing I wanted to touch on as well, when we sort of briefly touched on Eddie Maguire and sort of, his resignation last week. He was, I'm still sure, he has his foot in the door, in other positions. I think he, is a radio host. It's not like he's going to be widely missed,
He's going to be absent from the landscape of football coverage. I believe he is still going to maintain his position with Fox Sports. He will still be on Triple M, as far as I know. His presence will still be particularly known, will still be felt. With the club, I'm not so sure. I've heard two things. Listening to that really stagecraft resignation event, press conference, whatever you want to describe it as, it sounded as though he was stepping away and stepping a long way away from the board. But I've heard elsewhere that he will still be quite influential as retaining his seat on the board just not as a president. I guess all that is still unclear, and that's going to be some more clarity around that this week. I think there's going to be some announcements made this week from Collingwood. We'll also hear from, Lucy Barrett and Lyndon Coombs, who were the chief or principal authors of the Do Better report that was commissioned by the club. I think they're coming out and speaking for the first time this week. We'll hear probably from the AFL around what it intends to do to improve all of the sorts of things that the Do Better report identified for Collingwood, because we know that, there's problems within Collingwood, but as a public institution, it, you know, has ties to AFL as a bigger public institution, and that was really the problem right there that was identified by a lot of people that were involved, Lumumba, right through to others that have got short thrift from the club, and they were saying that, you know, this is a reflection on broader society, something needs to be done. And that was the interest in, or the incredible interest outside of footy mad Melbourne around this story, was that it's bigger than the club, it's bigger than the league, and bigger than the code.
Oh, definitely, you know, and I'm sure if you ask any black fella, you know, when we talk about racism, it's sort of bigger than, one, the individual, and sort of the institution they're a part of as well. It sort of seeps in, it seeps out of, you know, nearly sort of all the cracks in this society, you know, that are very influential on people, even on our own people as well. You know, like, it's, and it's sort of like what you mentioned before, like, you know, when you say, you know what I mean, like when we're talking about Invasion Day, and, you know, you can't not sort of escape the day on the 26th with whatever you're doing, because it's there in our face constantly.
Yeah. Well, the thing that I find interesting about everything that happened in the past 2 weeks, there's a lot there, and I've done, you know, spoken elsewhere about aspects of it. But it's the fact that despite what the report identified and the recommendations it made, and despite the reactions from you know, people that that welcomed Eddie stepping aside earlier than what he announced when the report was tabled back in early December, is the fact that, you know, the Collingwood Club, it's not as though everyone is rejoicing that Eddie's gone. We've seen that there were tears shed by supporters of the club after Eddie's announcement. Even at every sort of echelon or, you know, social step, class, that you have people supporting Eddie McGuire and supporting the club for the sorts of things that the report identified, and saying, you know, that there's no racism, that the race warriors you know, are off their nut with whatever. And it's just this really strange, you know, that attitude and those perspectives persist out there in the world, despite, you know, things like the Do Better report identifying, you know, why, or the harm that they that inflict upon individuals and institutions. But just this mentality of, no, you've got it wrong, we've got it right. You know? And that is the same sort of thing that you see around January 26th, that a reluctance to listen to anybody else telling you that it's impacting their life.
I might sort of just shift as well in these while we still have you. Yesterday, you know, was the 13th anniversary of the national apology given by the former Prime Minister Kevin Rudd to the Stolen Generation. I don't know if you heard before, when I was just sort of reading some info that I got offline, that I got off of social media, in regards to sort of the, like, obviously the number of kids taken back then has been disputed, but, you know, they gave sort of a figure of 100,000 children was removed, and they got that figure when estimating sort of the population of Aboriginal people in 94, which was 300,000. You know, would love to get your thoughts on the apology, and obviously one thing I forgot to mention as well is there, in terms of much more work being needed to do to rectify what happened, you know, for those elders. You know, compensation, I believe, you know, is something that those old fellows do deserve. But then also, you know, we have a current pandemic of Aboriginal children, you know, continuing to be stolen at a higher rate than the Stolen Generation as well. I believe, you know, the job is not done at all. Love to get your thoughts on the anniversary as well.
Well, the anniversary this year, my thoughts were two things, that it seemed to be a lot more subdued than in the past. You know, not so long ago, I would be getting approached by, you know, at least two media outlets to write op-eds on how the, you know, how much ground still needs to be covered in order for the national apology to actually be meaningful, to have meaningful impact on black lives. And this just doesn't seem to be that sort of fervor there amongst media. I think also the other interesting thing was usually we see a lot around closing the gap report and closing the gap measures just leading into and on the other side of the anniversary of the National Ecology. That has sort of been missing because, and I think very purposefully, the government has punted that forward into June or July, I think, releasing the 2021 Close the Gap report. I think we will hear possibly from Pat Turner today in Canberra there. Just have to check in on that. But, yeah, it's a lot of, the bells and whistles that go with this day usually just didn't seem to be there as much this year. And, yeah, you're right, we've got a long way to go. I think we published an op-ed by Celeste Little, and quite rightly and accurately she pointed out that Aboriginal kids still make up 40% of all kids taken into care by government authorities. And that's, whatever we're at now, 3% say, still around that figure, but still 40% representation on child removals. These are sorts of the gross sort of statistics that we see in all areas across all things that the Close the Gap report is supposedly, making ground on, or at least measuring, areas outside of the Close the Gap measures as well. So, look, while the event itself on the day was really emotional and significant and had to, I've been myself personally advocating it had to be done after a decade or more of John Howard just refusing to acknowledge, the reality of the existence of the Stolen Generations, the experiences of those people. There's still that gaslighting project going on. Since when that occurred to now, and every, you look at all the op-eds, you may all rightly point out that nothing's really changed. In fact, it's gotten, if you look statistically, the child removals was increased. All of the other measures have not made any ground either.
Oh, definitely.
So, look, it's just become a political opportunity. In short, it's become an opportunity for politicians, individuals, parties to give themselves a pat on the back and a nod to, their Indigenous affairs efforts or the Aboriginal affairs efforts or whatever the portfolio is labelled these days. And then move on to the next bit, bit of their week. So I'm a cynic. That's my personal belief. It's one of these things that you see coming in terms of being a journalist report on. You see coming and you just, you've got to do something on it. But you find when you're in that act of actually doing that something, that it seems to be very much like the year before and the year before that and the year before that.
For sure. I remember when we came, there was an event at Musgrave Park on the day as well. Like, we came in for that as well. But while I got at you for these last couple of minutes, there was another anniversary that was on yesterday as well, and that was the anniversary of Captain Cook being killed in Hawaii. In the last couple of minutes, your thoughts on that?
I enjoyed all of the activity I've seen on social media.
Yeah, same.
That's
same.
Probably all I can say. From what I can do now. But, there's some provocative posts out there. And I think, in the arena, in the public arena where these things are discussed, the dialogues around them, I think it's important to have those provocations.
Definitely. No, it was something... something to definitely see yesterday. It would have been cool if people were using hashtags, because it would have been good if it was trending, but I checked and it wasn't necessarily trending. But, all on social media, all you could see was a discussion around that.
I'm half expecting today, sorry to jump in, but I'm half expecting to hear something from, Rita Panahi or Shuri Marks or, one of those types of News Corp employees. Possibly something on Sky News, Chris Kenny or something tonight, really just, blowing out the sorts of things that were, you know, the cheeky little dialogues that were happening in social media yesterday, you know, blowing it out of all proportion into something extremely, you know, absurd. It's generally the way things go.
But, brother, thanks for coming on this morning for a chat with us. Always appreciate your time, and would always love for you to come back on the program, sometime soon.
No worries. Thanks for having me. And, definitely just give it a buzz whenever and always keen.
Cheers. And if you are tuning in, that was Jack Lattimore, Gory Man, Biripi Man, based in Victoria, works at NITV. We were just having a bit of sort of a wrap around and what's sort of been in the headlines or on social media in the last couple of days. But if you've enjoyed the program, you can catch the repeat at 7 p.m. tonight. Also, you can go to our website at 989fm.com.au for the links to the podcast. You can follow the links. Just hit programs and then, you know, pick Let's Talk, and then you have then you can choose from as many or different Let's Talks to listen to. This one will be up a little bit later on in the day. And as always, it's a pleasure. You're listening to Let's Talk here on Murray Country, 989FM.
And if you write it, or if you don't, I forgave all of my ghosts. The end of a war is already wrong before it makes soon. The history that you're both speaking of up and out of the roads. See, I could be the
selling this.
No.
1988. Doing that for my people is something that was innate. Thousands of years of oppression sooner or later equates to generations after born with the warrior trait. It's not too late to make your time here worthwhile. Open your eyes and see that we don't even need to reconcile. We can't restore our friendliness. What we have to do is adopt. With no prior relationship, conflict never made it stop. What happened, hold it aside, left us separate at the heart. Same country, but worlds apart, the youth left with the aftermath. In my cart, you'll see a pen, pad, and mic. Now that I've got these weapons, I no longer need my fist to fight. I just write whenever those emotions do arise. Check it, I'm 23 and I just got my land rights. This is my life, and this is me. Can't you see, you've just been introduced to KMT.
You gotta have the fuel to feed the burning desire. You're not hearing this warrior's war cry. Yes, many have died for the cause. The battle in which is our lives. No need to make stories up. We've been living it ever since my great-great-grandfather's times. He signed with an X and he didn't understand the complexities, genocidal effects that would happen to today's generation. Assimilation, we faced it. We sent letters to all those in power asking why. To list ain't not a damn reply. Guess these are the days of our lives. Cry silence by media hype and barefaced lies. But still we rise above the rest. The test is yet to come. I guess that's why we run like a ritual rapping over dinner. 1DK's material. Imperial stormtrooper superior beats. More elements in trouble, sums of madness. To help you see what we want you to see. Cause we won't be what this mainstream wants us to be. Producers, DJs, singers and MCs. Speeding down this halfway to life. Trying to keep it together.
Can't see.